Santa. Hello. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. It's the day before Thanksgiving. Don't forget, tomorrow we will be here because we are lame. And also because Rick Emerson cares. Mostly the lame thing, though. So while everybody else is shoveling out tedious festives and reheated reruns and so forth, we'll be here eating meat cake for your enjoyment and amusement. And by the way, I got this from the Metro section. We'd like to commend the police officers of Portland for once again killing a guy who obviously needed killing. Portland police, this is from the Metro section by Esme. Officer shot and killed a man Sunday outside a Southwest Portland motel. We were talking about this before. It's very strange that they would kill somebody in Southwest. They must have thought they were somewhere else. Sergeant Brian Schmaltz, Portland Police Bureau spokesperson, said 52-year-old David Earl Hughes had been wanted on a felony warrant. Police began searching for the man last Tuesday when he failed to appear at his sentencing after pleading guilty to charges of burglary in the first degree with a firearm and possession of a short-barrel shotgun and arson. On Sunday, officers and members of the U.S. Marshals Service Fugitive Task Force went to the hospitality. These places always have names like this, too. Like the feel-good inn. The hospitality inn. On Capitol Highway near Barber Boulevard. The best part about these stories is they always give the address, too. They always tell you exactly where this business is, where a guy was, like, shot in the face repeatedly. Anyway, officers went to the motel about 1 a.m. to search for Hughes. Eventually, they saw Hughes jumping from his second-floor window with luggage in hand. Just all kinds of Mensa.
But hit the ground first.
Schmaltz said that when officers confronted him, they repeatedly told Hughes to show his hands in plain sight. Instead, Schmaltz said, Hughes repeatedly told officers to shoot him. They did. Now he's dead. Mission accomplished.
He wanted killing.
How's the luggage, though? I'm sure American Tourister wants to know that for their next product placement.
Seriously, Samsonite needs to know.
Survives.
Second story falls and fragment scrapings. So there you go.
Well, that's what I call hospitality.
That's hospitality Southwest Portland style. So there you go. Another exciting story that wraps itself up with a red ribbon saving me tax expense.
He was given everything he asked for.
Well, that's... we're just for anything that eliminates, that streamlines the legal process in this country. You know what I mean? You want to be killed? Cops kill you. Mission accomplished. Everybody wins. So thank you, police officers of Portland, for killing a guy who... clearly needed killing. Ladies and gentlemen, at the Ministry of Truth, the real reason you are here today, it's Tim Riley.
Time for the Rick Emerson Noon News Hour from AM 970 Solid State Radio. And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
Well, just when you thought the story was old news, comes a brand new question. Did Michael Richards attack the Jews? Two Los Angeles residents have come forward and said that's exactly what happened last spring at the L.A. comedy club, The Improv. Carol Oshin and J.P. Fillet say they were at The Improv on April 22nd when Richards took the stage. They said in the middle of Richards' skit, a man in the audience said something to the comedian, then Richards allegedly launched into an anti-Semitic rant. According to the woman, Richards screamed at the audience member, "You effing Jew."
That's you, f-ing Jews. The Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world. Are you a Jew?
You people are the cause of Jesus dying.
Jesus God.
The rant continued and Richard stormed up the stage. The two folks said at first they thought Richard's tirade was part of his act, but claim it quickly became apparent it is not. Richard's publicist, Howard Rubenstein.
Don't.
Oh.
Irony meter at 10.
Oh. Has confirmed that Richards did make derogatory comments about Jews, but he said it's part of his act. Uh-huh. Rubenstein says Richards told him, "I'm not anti-Semitic. I was playing a role and poking fun at rednecks."
Okay, there you go.
My life is...
Thank you. All right, there you go. By the way, the Daily Jewish Review, it was some newspaper. I think it was the Jewish Review of Greater Los Angeles, I believe. I'm getting the name of the paper wrong. I apologize, but I think that's what it was. Last night, I saw this on Google News, and it's one of those things that you think at first is like some sort of sub-onion, kind of the parody news, it's like satirical news or whatever, and I swear to God, their lead story last night was Michael Richards, colon, not a Jew, because apparently there was a lot of sort of punditry about the internet. Well, as a Jew, he ought to know the pain that racial slurs can... And, man, it's like the Jewish community is putting it every time they give, like, an 80-point type. Not a Jew! Just desperately trying to disassociate themselves from this. So, Howard Rubenstein.
That's fantastic. Mm-hmm.
The owner of the Laugh Factory says he has invited actor Michael Richards to come back to the club and apologize to the audience he offended. The former Seinfeld actor went on, well, we know what happened. The hecklers. Now we have the hecklers here. They are Kyle Dawson and Frank McBride. They appeared on the Today Show this morning, where Dawson gave his view of what took place.
And he looked at me and flipped me off. This was the camp. This is what the tape didn't show. And he flipped me off and he said, F you N-word.
Dawson says Richard got very personal during his rant.
He even told me, he was like, when I wake up, I'm still going to be rich, but when you wake up, you're still going to be an N-word.
Jesus God almighty.
Oh
because it just wasn't bad enough. Oh, yeah, he's never going to work again. There you go. The best part is when you hear a lot of the, well, maybe it's just some kind of Andy Kaufman-esque publicity stunt. Yeah, not going to work.
Yeah, he'll end up at some casino in Washington State somewhere. I think we know a few who might welcome that sort of thing.
Yeah, it's right there with Casey and the Sunshine Band.
Mm-hmm. Time now for a Britney watch.
Here's your Britney watch for Wednesday. The Rick Emerson Show.
I think I did it again.
We'll do this Britney watch, then we'll answer this mincemeat pie question, and we have a guy who is at that shooting or near that shooting when it happened.
Oh, that sounds terrific. Is that part of the mincemeat pie story?
Yeah.
Yes.
Here's Tim Riley.
Well, to an enthusiastic applause from the audience, Britney Spears greets the audience at last night's broadcast of the American Music Awards. Number 3.
Let's see here.
The night and hear the nominees.
You know, this really does prove, by the way, that the reason we all started to dislike Britney Spears is just that she was married to some knuckle-dragging nitwit because all she had to do was dump... Man, we were all writing her off, man. We thought Britney Spears was over. All she had to do was dump that guy and we welcomed her back into our bosom with loving arms.
Well, those behind the scenes say Britney was, quote, pissed, unquote. This involves a sketch featuring host Jimmy Kimmel... sealing a Federal Line lookalike in a wooden crate and shipping him out to sea. Kimmel called KFED the world's first ever no-hit wonder. Less than 5 minutes later, he introduced Spears as the surprise presenter, so we have a little bit of that here. Jimmy Kimmel kicks off the ceremony with a few jokes about KFED.
And this is not right. Do people compare Kevin Federline to Vanilla Ice? And it really isn't fair. I mean, Vanilla Ice had a hit song. Kevin Federline... If you think about it, Kevin Federline is the world's first ever no-hit wonder.
The great thing about this is there will inevitably be the tell-all book from Kevin Federline, so we're going to wait on that now.
Kimmel jokes even more about Kevin Federline.
The album Playing With Fire is the first release by Kevin Federline that didn't result in a baby.
True. fantastic. Excellent. There you go.
When contacted, a rep confirms to TMZ the idea of the skit was Kimmel's and he went forward with it because I knew they wouldn't mind because I know they both have a great sense of humor.
Of course. Of course. Everybody, you look at Kevin Federline, that's exactly like, what you think. You think he has a Noel Coward-esque wit about him. All right. Is that our Britney watch?
That is our Britney watch.
There you go. Here's your Britney watch for Wednesday.
Before you go, there's something I want you to have.
You see, my problem is this.
Fantastic.
And that's what got an intern hired. Basically, it comes down to that.
No, it really is true.
That sealed the deal.
Dreams became reality with that overproduced soundbite. As Scotty J is noting on the screen, Rick, the funny part is that Vanilla Ice did way more than people give him credit for, says Scotty J.
Yeah, he sold insurance.
Yes, Rick, just ruminate on that. And he has stare. I've seen the inside of Vanilla Ice's house, actually, and there was a television show. And the best thing about it is he's got... Vanilla Ice does that great thing, the same thing that Larry Flint did at his house, where it's... Like, he's white trash, and then he got a lot of money, and so he wanted to have a house that was sort of upscale and, you know, had a nice sort of, like, a boutique feel to it. But because he's really just not all that bright, the closest, like, you go into Vanilla Ice's house, and there is a spiral staircase with glass steps, and each step is like an aquarium filled with goldfish. So there you go. That's That's what selling that's what like selling 50 million records lets you get. Let's see here. This is Aaron, non geek in the city. Hello, Aaron.
Yeah, minced meat pie.
Yes.
Minced beef, pork, raisins, and apple with some spices.
See,
boiled down and put in a pie crust.
See, I don't understand. Of all the things available to eat in the world, why is this necessary? And who sat down and decided that these things would go good together?
That's what I don't understand.
And convince others to eat it.
That's...
I think it's a Pennsylvania thing, to be honest with you.
Oh, yeah, they do eat weird things there.
Is this Scrapple?
I think it might also be known as Scrapple.
It's known as what?
Scrapple.
Scrapple.
Is Scrapple and minced meat are the same thing?
I think it's Scrapple
it's a breakfast
minced meat
food.
Without the pie crust, if I'm not mistaken.
Is this one of those, like, poor hick things where it's, like, everything left at the bottom of the bag when the end of the month comes and you're waiting on a government check and so you just shove it into a bowl and eat it?
It is a typical Pennsylvania breakfast.
Yeah, it's an Amish thing. Who knows?
Yep.
Thanks.
There you go. Thank you. I like how that explains it all. Well, what can you do? They're Amish. So Scrapple and mincemeat are the same thing.
I remember the reason I know this is because my dad owned a B&B in Pennsylvania and everyone got Scrapple for breakfast.
Scrapple for all.
Tim brought up a good point, though. Who sits down and figures these things out?
I think about this a lot, actually. Here's what I think about, and this is a question that's never really...
The other gross thing is orange marmalade. That would be tasty.
And I don't understand the difference between marmalade and jams and preserves. And please don't call. I don't really care all that much. I'm going to be able to sleep just fine not knowing about it. Here's the thing that I think about, and this has never been adequately explained to me. I don't understand beer. And when I say that, I mean, I don't understand how beer came to be. Do you know what I mean? Like, who?
Yes.
It seems rotten grain.
Well, yeah, but it seems like it had to have been... accidental, by definition, right?
A bunch of bored peasants got together.
But why would you take something that has gone off? Like, the defining characteristic of beer is that it's gone bad, right? It is fermented. It's gone rotten. Who then sees that and says, you know that rotten crap you've got out back that's stinking in the mud hole? I'm going to drink that.
And corn is made of fungus.
It is true. It is, I mean, the whole thing is...
And it's tasty. I'm glad somebody decided to make something edible out of fungus.
They discovered blue cheese by leaving it in a cave for 3 months.
Yeah.
Who does that?
The Flintstones.
Yes.
Let's leave it in a cave and then eat rotten cheese 3 months later.
It's a bet. Ryan, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
Yeah, so that shooting in Southwest Portland, that's like 100 yards from my parents' house.
Really? Did you witness it?
I did not, but my brother owns a business that's like 100 yards in the opposite direction. He said he saw the whole thing. They're watching it.
And he's happy about that. So this is this a hotel that's known to have a lot of death happening there?
Actually, no. It's like a really normal, pretty nice hotel and everything.
Well, we were speculating that maybe the cops thought they were going to that Motel 6 on Powell and 36, because that's where all the killings happen. Really, like two-thirds, it seems to me. And I can say this because I drive by it, to work and from work every day. And, man, I can't even fathom the amount of yellow police tape they must go through at that Motel 6. Because every time you go there, here's what you see. Yellow police tape, three police cruisers, and then a guy doing that pose that you see on the news a lot where he's being let out of the room with his jacket over his head so that he doesn't bring shame to his family, which is inevitable anyway.
Smoking or non-smoking. Without bullet holes.
But I bet the hookers that die there don't have suitcases.
Walking over the steaming pile of blood in the lobby to get to the candy machine.
If it helps any, Rick, within like a block of there, there's also a liquor store and one of Oregon's largest porn stores.
Fantastic. Well,
and Starbucks.
But isn't that statement true of anywhere in Portland, really? And you're right across the street from a place where you can buy guns and pornography. I mean, that really is the defining characteristic of the city, and I say that with pride.
Well, guns are the only thing that's missing from that block.
It's true. All right, there you go, sir. Sounds like there's a marketing niche just waiting for you. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
Well, U.S. and Argentine media reported that one of the Bush twins had her purse stolen while being guarded by the Secret Service during a visit there. ABC News, citing unidentified law enforcement reports, says on its website that Barbara Bush's purse and cell phone were taken when she was dining in a Buenos Aires restaurant. La Nación newspaper reports anonymous government sources said on its online edition that one of the Bush daughters, and apparently it's Barbara, considered by the family to be the hot one, had her purse taken Sunday afternoon in the popular tourist district of San Telmo. A pair of thieves removed the purse from under a table while Secret Service agents stood guard in the distance, La Nación said. The sources did not reveal which of the Bush daughters had her purse stolen, but we know it's Barbara.
Is Barbara Bush the one who looks ever so slightly like porn star Brandi Taylor? Now, I ask no one in this room right. necessarily, but just the people.
The other twin looks like Kipper Gore, or a younger edition of her.
Let me see here. If I
take a look.
All right. So Barbara's the one on the right here?
Yeah, she's the troublesome one.
Yes. The hot one is always the one who's mm-hmm. trouble. The other one is just sitting at home.
Just a simpleton.
Reading Anne of Avonlea novels. All right here.
Well, weird things happen in that city anyway. I mean, that's the kind of place where people, you know, walk around the dark alley shooting poison darts into your neck with blowguns.
Oh, no. you wake up in an ice water. Where's my kidney? All right. Well, there you go. So one of the... now, was she beaten or was her guard beaten?
The guard was beaten.
All right. Well, there you go. So the hot bush twin... and you know what it really all comes down... The weird thing about this is... Here's the weird thing about the hot... I'm sorry, that's my phone is ringing. Let me make sure I turn that off. Here's the weird thing about the bush twins is that she is the hot one, Barbara is.
Mm.
And the creepy thing about it is that she kind of looks like her dad. You know, she kind of looks like George Bush. And that's always a weird thing. Like when there's some girl that's all hot and then you realize that she looks like her dad. And then you just start to... And then you got to do everything you can just not to think of that, right? Because then suddenly whenever you look at her, you just see the ghostly floating face of her dad right in front of her. And that's all kinds of creepy. And then the other one, you're right, the other bush twin just looks all pinched and bony and unpleasant. All right. Well, there you go. Fantastic. All right, what have we got here, Scotty? Oh, this is Dave. Dave, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick. How's it going, Dave?
What do you got, brother?
Scrapple and mincemeat aren't even remotely alike. Mincemeat came along before refrigeration, and it was typically made out of venison, some kind of game, put down in a mixture of apple and some kind of booze, usually brandy.
Mm-hmm.
And you could have it any time throughout the year. Scrapple, which my dad used to make, started out taking a pig's head and putting it in a big pot. I'm boiling the
I'm taking my headphones off. let me know when this phone call is over, please.
And then extract all the meat, including the tongue and jowl and brain, and chop it all up and mix it with cornmeal and some other
Jesus God stuff. Almighty.
And bake it.
Okay.
It's really delicious.
Thanks.
I just ordered some from the Vermont Country Store.
Of course you did. Welcome to the lunch hour, by the way.
Yes.
I would like Tim to appreciate the bullet that I am now taking for him by listening to this phone call.
Hi, thank you.
Okay, so, all right. And that the one you were just describing was what? Was
Scrapple.
Scrapple. Yeah, okay.
Not to be confused with Scrabble.
Yeah, thank you. Okay, there you go. Thank you, sir.
Bye.
Oh, that was fantastic. I'm in your closet at home. I'm walking around in your wife's under things. Dave's calling from inside the house. Jesus God Almighty. Don't even get... Well, cause see, this other guy's... Sorry, that's me. This other guy said... He said the Rick mincemeat pie is made out of raisins, spices, booze, and suet. And suet's another one of the... You know what suet is like? Suet's like sluice. It's one of those words that you sort of understand, but you don't really know what it means.
I think it used to be a horse.
I think of suet being like bird food.
I think you're thinking of stewball.
Oh, that could be.
I'm sorry?
I think of suet as bird food.
Maybe. I don't know. All right, just move on from the boiling of heads, shall we? Here's Tim Riley.
Okay, we have some O.J. news here.
Excellent. Fantastic.
In a live telephone interview on the radio this morning, O.J. explained that he's now a quashed book. If I did it, started out with the statement that he did not commit the murders of his ex-wife, Nicola Brown, and Ronald Simpson. It was on the air saying that the book was not meant to be a confession. Instead, it is complete fiction.
Two things I would not participate in is if you get any graphic about anybody getting cut or stabbed, which is not in the book, or I wasn't going to try to make the LAPD's evidence work. It didn't work in court, and I'm not going to try to make it work here.
You know, why does it say what radio station this was?
This is WTPS Miami.
Now, why do these other... He says, here I am openly. I'm putting out the offer to O.J. Anytime he wants to come on, he has carte blanche. O.J., the door is always open for you. And by the way, I don't know if I mentioned this on the air or off the air, but I was looking at eBay last night. Man, there's a couple of those books that are already going for like $3,000 on there. So, I mean, I'm
there the Cabbage Patch Kids of the holiday season.
Really? It's true. It's like a Dismember Me Elbow. No, I've sort of given up hope that anybody at a bookstore is just going to kind of give me one. That was my, because the thousands of them have already been shipped. I mean, they're sitting there like Harry Potter books. They're just sitting there right there, just waiting to be sent back and pulped. But again, it's just going to be like that Bloody Baby doll cover from that Beatles record. It's just, you know, a few of them will slip out and they'll become collector's items. So I'm just saying, and Rick Emerson just wants to wet his beak. That's all I'm saying. Just let me give it a good Xeroxing before you decide to sell it on eBay. That's all I'm asking for. Because it does seem like a given that the special is going to end up on the internet because it's already been filmed. And nothing that exists on film, it's just like the Steve Irwin footage. We all know it's eventually going to get out there. So, all right. Here's Tim Riley.
Simpson says most of the book is not about the incident.
You got about half a chapter that is dealing with the incident. And in that half a chapter, maybe a few pages that deals with the confrontation, alleged confrontation.
That's fantastic. Way to smooth talk, OJ. Good times.
Well, Thanksgiving makes plumbers' hearts sing. That's because the food festival holiday is responsible for so many drain clogs the day after, making it the busiest unclogging day of the year.
You have extra toilet flushes, extra laundry loads, extra showers, and, of course, the big meal being prepared in the kitchen, and a lot of things go down the kitchen sink that tend to back up the drain.
Extra showers?
Mm-hmm. That's drain clog expert Paul Abrams.
I think we just found out where the giblets go.
I'm serious. Thank you.
Well, he says your garbage disposal is not meant to hide everything on the plate.
Stuffing tends to swell up when it gets down there. Rice and potato peels are starchy, so they turn to goo. Mashed potatoes, poultry skins, that stuff gets down in the disposal, can't grind it up.
They turn to goo. Well, really, I mean, really, if we're going to speak in a larger sense, doesn't everything turn to goo? The garbage disposal also does not get rid of, here's the thing, it doesn't get rid of citrus rinds. That's the other thing, which I didn't know for the longest time. And I would just, you know, I have a lot of lemons, like, at my house, you know, like, for tea or, you know, for whatever. And, man, I would just take the lemon rinds and just put them down there. And then after a while, the garbage disposal wouldn't work anymore, and you'd realize that there was about 3 months' worth of rinds that would just gather up down there at the bottom. Fantastic. Turns to goo.
Mr. Abrams says anything that will clog your arteries will clog your drains.
It just over time they will get coated with goo and choke the life out of the drain pipes over time. Nothing like Thanksgiving to serve as a catalyst or a heart attack for your house.
It's like cancer for your plumbing.
It's just over time they will get coated with goo and choke the life out of the drain pipes over time. Nothing like Thanksgiving to serve as a catalyst or a heart attack for your house.
Happy holidays, everybody, from the Rick Emerson Show.
He gets entirely too much pleasure from saying goo.
He
sounds really happy.
He's like the Bob Ross.
He's an expert on drain clogs.
Yeah, really.
Everybody's going to be an expert on something.
Yeah, his niche.
Everybody has a calling. Craig, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Hey, Rick.
What's up?
I know what goo it is.
All right, is this going to involve boiling or extracting tongues from anything?
No, not at all. Actually, all right. It's a chunk of fat that's on the bottom of a beef loin right next to the tenderloin. And a lot of people use it in mincemeat pie and other things around Christmas time.
What is this compulsion we have to take things that ought not to be eaten and then to ruin perfectly good foods by adding them? And so it's just a big piece of fat that you just shove into the pie for no readily apparent reason?
You chop it up. That's the mincing part.
Okay. You know what this need is? This pie, which is made of apples and raisins and cinnamon, do you have maybe like a gigantic cube of pork fat that we could dice up in this? That's the extra zing that would make this pie a 10. I just don't understand people sometimes. All right. Well, God bless you, sir. Thank you, Craig.
God bless you.
All right. Thank you. No, God bless you, sir. Real quickly, here, Joe, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hey, Rick.
Joe.
Beer was invented, I think, back in the late 1500s by some monks in Germany.
You're making this up, aren't you?
No, I swear to God. They drink when they fast. They fast, and they put barley and crap in it, and then they pound down a couple of tall ones instead of eating.
For the Lord. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, seriously.
You have to be drunk.
And hey, man, I don't know if the guy before me was talking about sweetbreads, but I always thought they were a gland out of the throat of a cow that you fry up. And they're really good. I've actually had them.
Who wants a big plate of fried glands?
Yeah, well, my grandparents grew up during the Depression, and they grew up above Yakima.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they were really poor. They had the roots covered in the whole
I'm sorry? No, no, we're, no, no, losing your phone. No, it's too bad. No, we, damn all the, no, we lost him. Sorry.
Darn.
I like any story that begins in the Yakima during the Depression and contains a big bowl full of glands. Good God Almighty. Let's take a break here. We'll come back with more from Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Mmm, tasty. It is the Rick Emerson Radio Program. We'll be back after this. Later on, Jim Roop, Dennis Pitzenbarger, the worst sound in the world, and we read the Inquirer, so you don't have to. Stay there. Don't go anywhere. Hello. It's the Rick Emerson Radio Program. It's 503-733-2970. 503-733-2970. Coming up later on, we've seen the radio correspondent Jim Roop, who's going to join us. Dennis Pitzenbarger is going to be here as well. We'll read the Inquirer so you don't have to. We have the week in geek. And we'll ask the magical question, what is the worst noise in the history of the world? All right. Oh, really? Okay, thank you. Let's now welcome to the Rick Emerson Show our good friend Sarah X. Dillon, who is you're still here, right? You're at the airport.
Hi, Rick.
Hello, yes,
I'm at the airport right now.
Are you drinking?
I would not say so much I'm drinking as I'm drunk.
Fantastic. Now, are you drinking? Is this your own the beverages you're drinking, or are you having to drink the airport?
No. I had a couple of double Bloody Marys at the bar. They're really nice. And honestly, I actually put my mini bottles into that little plastic, like quart-sized baggie that you can bring in.
Uh-huh.
And they didn't say a damn thing. So I have like six bottles of vodka that I can drink on plane with me.
Yay.
Fantastic.
I'm so happy for you.
Especially.
I'm happy for me too. I'm very excited.
Especially because I forgot to bring my Valium for you. I was going to bring you that Valium and then I forgot.
I know I was going to hit you up for that, but honestly, I'm feeling pretty okay. And now we just went to Wendy's to get some lunch, and I have a Diet Coke here, and Nate's buying a couple shots of whiskey, so we're going to have some whiskey coke now.
It's going to be the best flight ever.
Dude, I don't think I've ever been this drunk this early ever.
Excellent. Good. Well, but you know, if you think about it being on Wisconsin time, it really is. It's almost 3:00.
No, it's... Oh, I guess so.
Yeah, see,
but I'm fine.
So there you go. See, it is...
I don't have a problem.
No, it is, Sarah, as 98.7 KUPL, the biggest hits, the biggest stars would remind us, it is 5:00 somewhere.
No, it is totally crowded, and Nate, every time we travel together, he gets pulled aside, and he was totally, like, wanded, and he had, like, the drug swab and everything done on him.
The drug swab?
What?
Because he has this chain around his neck that he has welded to his neck so he doesn't take it off.
Uh-huh.
And so every time he gets stuck in the little booth with the guy with the gloves, and they're totally patting him down. Nate, say hi to Rick.
Hey, Rick, we're about to drink $15 shots.
Fantastic. You got swabbed?
Nate, sorry. Sorry.
All right, yeah, have some more booze. So they went through his possessions.
They went through his... possessions.
I'm drunk.
Sorry.
Meeting his parents is going to be fun.
Yeah, seriously.
Okay, so he went through all the stuff, and then he had to stand there like Jesus for like 10 minutes and just patted him down and like gave him like four different wands, and they like swabbed him down. So he was carrying drugs in his ankle brace, which was really amusing.
Fantastic. Excellent.
He was not.
It's going to be the best trip ever.
Best trip ever, yeah. So our flight's going at 1:40.
Excellent.
So we're just getting ready to go.
Can I share one final thought with you?
Yes, of course. Don't say it. Teach me how to
die. Just, there you go. All right.
Wow.
All right.
You're an evil person.
I know. No, it's going to be a fine flight. It's going to be great. You'll get through it with a palm. Call me from
considering
the...
Considering it's pouring rain and foggy and I'm nervous.
I don't know.
Be fine, darling.
You'll be fine. Remember, just here's the thing, because I mean this sincerely now. This will really help. You're sitting there playing. If you're nervous, I'll tell you what. You and Nate, hold hands, and to whatever extent you can, act out the last 5 minutes of Say Anything. It sounds dumb, but it'll distract you. It'll be funny and sweet and cute. And by the time you do it, man, then you'll hear the little ding, and then everything will be fine.
That is a good idea. We will do that.
All right. And
I am calling you tonight while you're at home asleep with your lovely wife, and yes. I'm going to disturb you when I get to Wisconsin.
Please do. Thank you so much.
Okay.
All
well,
right.
Have a good show.
Thank you, Sarah. All
okay.
right. Travel safe. There you go. All right. There's, ladies and gentlemen, Sarah X. Dillon. All right. Yes, and always look out for the man on the wing. Thank you, Scotty. So gremlin on the plane! Here's, that was the best part is when we had to dump her there. That was fantastic. All right. It's 503-733. Is it Bank A, Tim? 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, here is Tim Riley.
But first, some brand new, updated Michael Richards news.
Oh, fantastic.
Now, apparently, this publicist we mentioned, who's Jewish, Howard Rubenstein, was just hired today by Michael Richards.
Oh,
oh, no.
Bam.
I'm laughing. It's not fun.
Yeah.
And publicist Rubenstein says his client, Mr. Richards, is reaching out to civil rights leaders asking for forgiveness.
Uh-huh.
Richards was on the phone today with Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, he thinks all black people follow these two gentlemen.
Well, that's because they're part of the Afro-American community he was referring to yesterday.
So Mr. Rubenstein said Mr. Richards has made other phone calls today as well, expressing regrets for his comments. Rubenstein says he's appalled at what he did and wants to start the healing process.
All right.
Whether it'll be an attack on any racial group, disguised or posed as humor, he acknowledges it's horrible and wrong, and he will never do that again.
Mm-hmm.
Rubenstein said the calls were received positively. Sharpton, however, stated publicly that he did not buy Richard's apology on Letterman.
Well, and you gotta wonder, I mean, one hates to be cynical about this, but that is our job, to cast things in the darkest, worst possible light. You gotta wonder, though, if he just picked up, like, his Hollywood agent manual and just went through and highlighted the names one by one, like Washington, Jefferson, Goldberg, Rubenstein, just calling one ethnic group after the, hello, Michael Richard, hello? Hello? Hello?
Shut up! 50 years ago, you had your own tied down with a fucking fork up your ass!
All right, fantastic. The best part
Could
is
you
the...
please accompany me to the Museum of Tolerance?
Seriously.
Mr. Rubenstein.
Can I be photographed weeping while ladling out food if there's someone in the kitchen? I tried to excerpt out the part where he says, I am not a racist, but it's, I think we encoded it the wrong way. It's not really going to play. So we have to make do with the...
Stop laughing. It's not funny.
I had to watch that again last night because my wife hadn't seen it. And so my wife and I had to go out to dinner last night.
Oh, where did you go to eat?
Oh, God, just an excruciating hell. Which I can say because she's on a plane right now and can't... No, the dinner... filled with ground glass.
No, the... this four-star restaurant.
Nothing but suet and cubes of fat. No. It's a fantastic restaurant. It's Salvador Mali's, where, you know, we've had many fine meals there. It's a great... And I mean this sincerely. Everybody knows. We
went there after something a few years ago.
I've tried to get them to advertise like 1,000 times. And it's just like they don't need it because you go there and they're just packed.
Yeah.
It is one of our favorite. Salvador Mali's actually is, and this is not done for consideration. Simply an observation that when people come to visit us from out of town, the relatives, friends, whoever, that's where we take them. That is the place we take them. We went there last night with some friends of hers, and it's like, and I was kind of not in a bad mood, but just I'd had my fill of people and society and engaging in conversation with anybody.
As in any day.
That's what I'm saying, and you know, and I can't speak for Kristen. Kristen Bowie is here for Sarah Dillon today, and I don't know about you, but
you can speak for me.
But yeah, speaking for Tim and I. When this show is done, really, we would just like to encase ourselves in hermetically sealed bubbles and then that shield us from any further human contact.
I have my days like that.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Those days
happens to me every day.
Every day for us. People will come in. We'll get people sometimes that come in and they're like, you know, somebody will drop by at like 3:01. I just came by to say hello. I love the show. I wanted to see Tim Riley. And it's like, you'll just hear like a little sound. And like Mitzel Plick in the Superman comics, Tim has just vanished. He's gone. Has just cloaked himself like a Romulan and vanished into the night. Last night was one of those nights for me, and I'm not going to do a whole thing about it, but I just... And it's always on those nights when I'm just like, I just don't want to talk to anybody. I don't want to I don't want to have to be amusing or funny for anybody. Those are always the nights where my wife calls me. God love her. You know, she calls me. She's like, hey, we're going out to dinner with 15 of my friends from work. Prepare some amusing anecdotes. You know, I've told everybody how hilarious you are. No pressure. You know, and then she picks me up, and it's like I'm just sitting there kind of, you know, just kind of grumpified and just feel a little, and I'm sitting there at dinner, and just feeling like a trained seal. You know what I mean? It's just sitting there. And, so, you do a radio program, Rick. Say something funny, you know? And I'm just feeling like I'm balancing a beach ball.
Put me in a more comfortable environment, like in a closet with no windows, and I might perform properly.
Exactly. I just, you know, and so I'm sitting there again. They were very nice people. They really were. They were nice folks, and it's a great restaurant, and I love my wife dearly. But, man, I just wanted to go home. Some days you just want to go home and shut the door and sit in a dark room and not speak to anybody for a while. It's just
just somebody with slippers and remote control.
Really, I mean, I just, yeah, that's it, man. I just want to be like that guy in Contact where he's like the bald guy where he's just floating in a space station above Earth, completely removed from all humanity for a while and just talks to Jodie Foster via webcam. Sometimes you just want to be that guy. But those were always the nights that I'm going out to dinner, and so I'm... And so what am I doing as I'm going into the restaurant? I'm preparing clever anecdotes in my head that I can unspool for this crap. And as I'm telling the funny stories that I have meticulously prepared in my head to enter, because you don't, because my, you know, and my wife and I used to have this agreement. We used to have it all worked out where people would ask what I did and she would say, he's an accountant. And I say that as a joke, but it's true. And that was not really for me. That was to shield her from like a bunch of irritating follow-up questions and a whole lot of, did you hear what he said about you on the radio today and all of that. So just to circumvent that, she would tell people I was an accountant. But eventually they sort of figure it out and, you know, whatever. And it's not like I'm some big guy who's known to everybody, but there's some small degree of notoriety to whatever slice of Portland. And eventually people would figure it out. And so, again, now, so I get to go to dinner and be the funny guy. And so as I'm unspooling my anecdotes that I've prepared in my head under the file, like, things, because you can't be a letdown, right? Because otherwise they'll think that not only did she marry a tool, but she married a guy who's really no good on the radio. So you feel compelled to be, like, funny in person, too. And as I'm telling the stories, I just get this third-person perspective visual of myself at the table as a seal sitting on top of, like, a, you know, a bucket going, you know, it's just, like, the worst.
Can you do that again? Oh, no.
One of those seals that, like, can like, blow into a series of horns in order to play the Star Spangled Banner to get a mackerel. I'm sorry. Did this all sound bitter?
This sounds factual.
Tim knows what I'm talking about, though. Good God almighty.
Makes
all right.
Feel a little bit better.
No, it's true.
You're not alone.
Here's Tim Riley.
Well, it's time for more happy Thanksgiving wishes to all. This time, we're going to go to Bank A here and hear from the president.
We're grateful for our beautiful land. We're grateful for a hard...
We're grateful. He's not even speaking English anymore. This is a made-up accent.
We're grateful for our beautiful land. We're grateful for a harvest big enough to feed us all, plus much of the world. We're grateful for our freedom. We're grateful for our families. And we're grateful for life itself.
All right.
Not much effort was put into that speech.
No, really not.
Too many OBGYNs aren't able to practice their love with women all across this country.
Fantastic.
There is no one on this earth more thankful than Joe Lieberman.
Without you and the people of this area,
I have no idea how
we
I
just
won.
Could not have done what we did on November 7th on Election Day. I must tell you that once again, Waterbury gave us a margin of 4,000 votes.
Really? It really is like they've elected a beige carpet swatch, you know, to offer. I mean, really, just that you couldn't. The man has all. And again, we have to respect him because we said he'd never win anything again.
Nope,
we had
and we're wrong.
We had written his obituary and cremated him already. And there he is in office. I mean, it's like electing a big bowl of tapioca pudding.
He also thanked some firefighters.
I have a lot to be grateful for, and you're a big part of the reason.
God, no kidding.
I could not have done it without you, and I give you my word that I will work my heart out over the next 6 years to vindicate.
I will give myself a stroke
that you showed in me.
I will work myself into an embolism for you.
Voting booth, real truth. Vote your mind. Find your leader.
Bottom line. John, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello, sir.
Rick, Sarah's call, best call ever.
Yeah, no, it really was.
Especially being on hold.
Yeah, you were on hold.
I got the full effect.
You got the unedited version. We had to bleep that.
Hey, first off, and I am in the same boat as you are, you would have been the worst frontiersman/pioneer ever. Because everything that you guys are talking about with the mincemeat and, you know, boiling down heads and all that, that's what all those folks ate.
Boiling anything, down heads.
You know, they'd be, you know, traveling in their wagon or coming back from cutting down trees or whatever they did. And that's what they ate, was that kind of stuff.
Oh, I know.
That's for all of that. Because, you made it sound like, let's see, T-bone steak, or I want a big brick of suet.
I understand that. No, you're right. This is why I don't enjoy, and this is one to my father's unending shame and horror, that I never enjoyed camping. I don't enjoy the outdoors. I don't enjoy hiking. I don't enjoy going and living in the middle of the forest for 3 days and having to engage in bathroom behavior with big fistfuls of leaves. It's 2006. I got a television. I got cable. I got a pizza delivery service. I'm not going to go live like a goddamn frontiersman.
I tell everybody that, to me, roughing it is no honor bar.
Yeah, I mean, dude, if you got fluorescent lights and air conditioning, why would you voluntarily give those up? I don't understand
If you ever listen to your friends who camp, they always eat the most bizarre things. They always talk about sleeping on rocks or some creature that crawled in. You know what? I have heritage that it already took care of all that.
Yeah, but, seriously. And they did it so we don't have to.
Exactly.
Think about if your house were set up like that. Like, if you were just asleep, and I know this sounds like a bad stand-up routine, but think about if your house was the way camping was. You're sitting there, you're in Lake Oswego in your living room watching the wide world of sports, and suddenly there's like a Gila monster in your living room, and you've got no toilet paper, all your water is giving you trichinosis, and you're having to eat bark. I mean, it's just, why would you'd kill yourself.
But I think under the same note, help us get back on track. The stuff like head cheese and all those weird...
Here we go.
Weird foods are sweet bread, are nice names for very disgusting things that I think had to be made palatable for people that didn't really, that got used to sucking on buttons.
Let's paint the boiled pig head in a positive light.
Sucking on button?
Well, I'm being flip, but, it's...
Who is Button?
No, to suck on a button.
Is
like red buttons.
Candy. It's like.
Let's bring him in next.
Fantastic.
No, I think he is good.
I'm sorry. No, you're right, but it's sort of like when Ronald Reagan stopped calling it war and started calling it a nuclear exchange.
Exactly.
Like we were all going to be trading presents at Christmas time.
Right, because what kid would want to have a big bowl of head soup?
Well, why is it? Yeah, seriously, why is it even? Why is head cheese even called cheese? It bears no resemblance.
It's held together. It's held together with gelatin.
Yeah, I mean, there's no cheese. It doesn't have a cheese-like quality to it. It doesn't share any ingredients with cheese.
Well, what else would you call it?
Butts and snouts. That's what it is. Hey, can I have a big slab of butts and snouts held together with gel?
This is a great lunch conversation.
Seriously. Yeah. Welcome to the lunch hour. All right.
Hey, have a great Thanksgiving.
Thank you, sir. All right, there you go. Thank you.
Goes through the rest of that square slice stuff behind those deli windows.
That's what I'm talking about.
It comes in a roll or something square?
No.
What kind of animal is that supposed to be?
I want to make sure that, like, when I first saw head cheese, I would ask because my mom ate it. And God love her, but look, I love my mother dearly. And I know that all boys say this about all their mothers, but my mother is a saint. She's a great person.
She grew up in simpler times.
That's what I'm saying. Right. She's a simple person. She's one of the great common people in this world.
A salt of the earth.
A hick. And I
love people who used to enjoy eating tongue.
What do you mean used to? I mean, I've told this story a million times, though. If it's because you're here, I can drag it out again. Being like in fifth grade or whatever, and right at that age when you really want to, you want to be the cool kid, you don't want to be the nerd. And, it's like, when you're a kid, you sometimes have a friend over from school, for dinner or whatever, or for, a sleepover or whatever it is you do. I remember my friend Brian and I were going home, like, hey, why don't you come have dinner at my house? It'll be great fun. We'll play the Atari 2600. We'll have dinner. We'll watch TV. We'll stay up late. We'll drink soda. Whatever. I'm all excited to have a friend over to my house and to show him how cool I am. That I got I think I had an Atari at that point. I'm like, that we had like a little swimming pool and stuff. And I was so desperate to be the cool guy. And come on over to my house. We'll have dinner. We walk. And my mom knew. God damn it. She knew. I'm not still seething. She knew I was having like a friend of mine from school over for dinner. We walk into the kitchen. Big saucepan simmering on the stove. Hey, what is it? Open up the lid. Big, giant friggin' tongue. Big, huge tongue. And I mean, you know what a tongue is. I mean, you can spot it. And the thing is, I don't think he'd ever seen a cow tongue. But there's no mistaking what it is. It's not like, what is this? It's a hamburger. That I don't know what it is. You look at it, you go, that's a tongue. It's a big tongue. But it does, even a fifth grader doesn't take, like, the math there isn't too hard. Shaped like a tongue, it's meat, it's cooking, it's a huge tongue. You know, it came out of a cow. And then suddenly he was gone, you know? And there I am alone at dinner that night at the table by myself eating a cow tongue and wishing I was dead.
I mean, people eat worse. They, how about, you know, polishing off a jar of pickled pig's feet and then asking for a Klondike bar?
My, what would you do for a pig's foot? My mom, cow tongue, head cheese, pig's feet, yes. Hominy, which is like a corn type thing, I think. God bless her, the one thing she never made me eat, and I'm really not trying to gross everybody out, but my mom is, again, I really do love her, but she grew up really poor, and it's like that thing of where, and I can't make fun of her to her face about it, because I know that it is just because she was like dirt poor. But man, the cow brains, why on earth? Once you are not dirt poor, and it's not like we had a lot of money growing up, but I mean, we weren't living in a rooster shed anymore. You don't have to eat the cow brain. Throw it away. No. Waste not, want not. And we were that horrible. And I'm not trying to make it sound like I was in a Steinbeck novel. It's like we had indoor plumbing and everything. But again, not a great deal of money. Being Catholic and deciding to have like 500 kids probably contributed to that. But we were that family. Like, there was a place called the Templeman's Meat Market where I grew up, and where they would sell like normal. And I know, Tim, you're not a meat guy, but it was very high quality. Like, if you wanted to get a steak or whatever, it was very high quality because it was, you know, it was, you know, whatever, or grass fed or whatever the hell it is. You know, really, before they thought about organic stuff, it was just really high quality meat products. But then you could also buy just a bag of crap at the end, you know? And the bag of crap was just sort of like, it's like when you're at a swap meet or something, and what is this? Well, it's a grab bag. Don't look inside. It's $5, you know? That's what it is, except the grab bag at the butcher shop is just the big bag full of butt, you know? That's what it is.
Oh,
what's for dinner? Big bag of butt. You know, but they don't call it that. They call it, you know, head cheese or whatever.
Yeah.
Hello. Here's Tim Riley. Sorry about all that.
Well, there's nothing more joyous than traveling with children this holiday season. This expert's name is John Townsend, and he tells us what to keep the youngsters occupied with during the ride.
Don't worry about their diets. Just give them something to eat, and you'll have a much happier camper.
We've had him on before. Siri, where one of the sound bites we lost when we came here from Intercom is that Sarah recapping what it was like to fly next to a crying baby, and she had this great sound effect. It was this great soundbite.
Oh, give the baby a cracker.
Shove a cracker in its mouth and make it shut up. Yep. It was a great Sarah soundbite. Let's listen to that one more time. Listen to the life force that's been sapped out of this man from dealing with children.
Don't worry about their diets. Just give them something to eat, and you'll have a much happier camper.
His soul's dead.
Mommy's favorite food for baby is Benadryl. So that's how I spell a pleasant cross-country flight, by the way, is NyQuil.
Great. And good times.
Members of the Boston University Republican Club are proposing a $250 scholarship that requires all applicants to be at least 25% Caucasian.
When we talk about race, you're usually talking about minorities. And we're trying to raise the awareness of this double standard there, that when someone has a black scholarship or a Hispanic scholarship, that seems to be okay. But when there's a white scholarship, everyone gets all upset. So we're trying to raise the awareness of about that.
Yes.
White college Republican President Joe Mosick.
It's so hard. It's tough to be white these days.
It is.
Really is. White. There's no breaks available to whites at all.
No.
Jews. The Jews are responsible for all the wars in the world. Are you a Jew?
All right, here's Tim Riley.
Now let's go to B now for more tips, because we all need to hear these things.
Fantastic. Oh, wait, do I have to reload these? Hold on just one second here. All right.
Let's see. Is that B?
Yes, it is.
That must be the old B.
Some things I would not participate in is if
O.J. Simpson.
Well, apparently the new B's didn't look.
All right.
Well, let's talk about something different, shall we?
Let's.
A family meal at a restaurant took an unsuspected turn when a total stranger walked in off the street and threw urine over diners and their food.
Lunch hour gets better and better, doesn't it?
He was heard to say, "This is for you," and threw the liquid all over the family and their meal. He then quickly walked out. A waitress at the restaurant called police, who did not arrive immediately, leaving the family sitting in urine-soaked clothes for more than 20 minutes. Alex Garola, who runs the restaurant, said the family was just having a good time enjoying their meal. The suspect, is about 5'6", short black hair, wearing a blue anorak and a red and white scarf. Anyone with information should call the Kingston Crime Management Hotline.
By the way, we've got this. This is from our good friend Aaron Geek in the City.
Hold me like you did by the lake on Naboo.
This email says, dude, at least you're white. Try being the only Mexican in a town of rednecks, says Aaron. You invite your friends over to eat, and you hear your mom declare in a loud voice, our heritage doesn't waste anything. Here's an example of a day at the Duran dinner table. Breakfast, menudo, with scrambled cow brains.
I believe that's called chorizo.
No.
I believe that's called.
What is chorizo? That is kind of a sausage.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
A Mexican
menudo
sausage.
Is
menudo
like
is cow stomach. Yeah, I think it's stomach. It's like tripe, isn't
something
it?
Unpleasant.
People eat it to get rid of hangovers, and apparently it works.
Well, because once you've hurled all the alcohol out of your system, the alcohol, I think menudo works to get rid of hangovers the same way castor oil works to get rid of hangovers. You just, you know, once you've projectile vomited all of the, we are still in the lunch, fantastic. Yes. Once you projectile vomited everything out of your stomach 5 or 6 or 7, 8, 9 times, you can feel a lot. I don't care what's wrong with you. You can have cancer. You'll feel better. Breakfast. Yeah, menudo, which is cow stomach and hominy with scrambled cow brains. Lunch, tongue taco. Dinner, ground beef heart chilaquiles. That's beef heart with strips of cheese. Mind you, he says, it's all fantastic, but not a good way to impress the ladies when you're 13.
Yeah.
You wanna, and nobody's going to be swapping lunches with you, by the way. You're sitting there on the bench. What have you got? I've got the cow tongue sandwich. What have you got? Yeah, that's going to work with Noah. Let's do one more here, and then we'll break.
Well, let's see here. Police in Texas attributed a sword injury to an accident. According to the police report, two brothers sharing an apartment were play fighting around 3 o'clock in the afternoon. One brother had a sword. The other brother had a bathroom plunger.
I don't care what happens from now on. It's the best story of the day.
One brother said he lunged with a plunger, and it sucked into the stomach of his brother, who was swinging the sword. In an effort to remove the plunger from his brother's stomach, he accidentally impaled himself on his brother's sword.
Oh, no.
His injuries are non-life-threatening.
No. No, no. Thank God. And I'm glad they're not, because we need those guys around for further stories in the future. Fantastic. All right. Oh, is that picture of Dick Clark?
This is really scary.
Have you show Kristen this picture of zombie Dick Clark?
Oh my God!
Yeah, don't have a stroke, kids. Yeah, well, I'll put that up on my website.
At least he can still open his eyes.
As far as you know, how do you know that? Those might just be painted on.
They've got like fish lines and tape.
Yeah, he's got the what's his name, Clockwork Orange, where they're just sort of.
Oh no.
Well, no, I mean they. I mean, this is a post. We'll get to this story later. In fact, let's do that at the bottom of the hour, 1:30. But then, never mind. I won't talk about Dick Clark now. I'll wait. It would be.
He'll be around.
He's
not going anywhere,
as far as we know. Okay, let's take a break here, shall we? Take a break. Come back with CNN radio correspondent Jim Roop. Later on, we'll have the top 5 musicians killed in a tragic, terrible, awful, horrible plane crash. Week in Geek. Dennis Pitzenbarger is going to be here later. We'll read the Inquirer, so you don't have to. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Saying of 970, Solid State Radio.